Hello everyone, welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Today we have a very special guest, but before I say who it is, I mean, sure you already see him on the screen, but thank you to our sponsors, Judo TV, Levon, David, thank you very much for your support. Yes, without delaying this any further, Roddy Ferguson, thank you for being here. Huge pleasure.
I said, man, if you got LeBron sponsoring the show, yeah, I need to be back more often.
Yeah, Levon, not LeBron. Yeah, that'd be cool, right? Yeah. Man, for those of you who don't know, Roddy is a two-time Olympian, and he was the OG first BJJ judo double black belt in the United States that I personally know of. And as I was entering into the judo space in the competitive scene, Roddy's 10 years older than me, so he was already really established. So this is somebody that I looked up to. He was a personal hero of mine in the U.S. judo circuit. Thank you so much for being here, man.
Well, thank you, man. But just to clarify, because I always want to give respect where respect is due, Tamok Johnson Ono was the first dude who was
Right.
A judo black belt and judo black belt and Olympian who's also a BJJ black belt. And then after him, there's me, and then there is I think there's another dude in the Philippines, and then there's Travis Stevens.
Yes, so
there's not a lot. True. There's not a lot of us who are BJJ black belts who are also Olympians and judo black belts as well.
Nice. So what was that like entering the scene in the beginning? There's a couple things I remember. When I met you at some kind of training, you told me about an omoplata sweep, right? That was kind of like useful for judo from close guard. I remember that.
Yes.
And then I remember you like launching dudes in the ADCC back in the day when, you know, ADCC was sort of newer, right?
Well, I tell you, I had one of my coaches, man, was one of the pioneers in terms of coaching education for the BJJ and Judo Fusion. At that time, it was Lord Irvin. I got my went from white belt to brown belt under Lord Irvin, and I got my black belt and all my degrees under Ricardo Laborio because I moved from Maryland in the D.C. area into Boca Raton, Florida after the Olympics. So
nice.
Lord really, like, he came to the Olympic Training Center. He studied. I think currently he's a Nidan right now in judo. And he just really, really studied and implemented some of the systems from judo inside of his dojo. He's one of the people who actually went full circle on everything in terms of, and I think most Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners who really go deep into BJJ, they take one or two paths. Either they go full circle and bring themselves all the way back around to judo, like you see Keenan has done and some other people, or they take this submission wrestling path and they go into the sambo leg locking space. But he's one of the people who really went full circle and came back around and went into the judo and really learned everything. But during that time period I started jiu-jitsu in 1998. So I'm my fourth degree and I get my fifth degree this year. Man, it was, Brazilian jiu-jitsu was like the wild, wild west, man. There was a lot of cheating going on, man. I remember I lost the Pan American Championships in the finals by decision, and I lost the World Championships in the purple belt division also by decision.
Oh man, I didn't know that you went to the Worlds in Jiu-Jitsu. I had no idea.
I went to the Moon Gels. My claim to fame is I beat Rafael Lovato when he was coming up, but I can't do anything with him now.
Yeah.
And I think it was Chael Sonnen's Jiu-Jitsu coach. We competed in the same division too.
Nice.
But yeah, I was doing judo at that time. I was really, really in good shape.
Yeah.
I mean, just not to bounce all over the place, but there's just absolutely zero comparison to the shape that a high-level judo player is in compared to a high-level jiu-jitsu player. I mean, I've looked at the data. I've seen the VO2 max studies. I've seen the strength studies.
Which are
available on Google on Google Scholar. You can look them up. Like the only comparison for the strength of a high-level judo athlete is a freestyle wrestler and a Greco-Roman wrestler.
Yeah.
Greco, they actually have a little bit more strength in the trunk area than some of the judo players.
Yeah.
But the judoka are way more explosive than the freestyle wrestlers.
Just interesting.
Just because of most of the throwing. Yeah.
So for those of you guys who are listening, wondering, right? Roddy is a PhD, so he's a doctor, right? And field of study was it kinesiology?
No, well, it was education, but I geared it more to the what you would call the psychomotor domain. So my dissertation was on how to improve performance in the NFL 225-pound bench press to failure test by training in a stabilization limited training environment. So I've taught kinesiology and exercise science at the University of Central Florida and the University of Tampa. And I also taught nutrition at the University of Tampa, and I currently teach four sections of elementary judo at Howard University.
That's a cool one. That's amazing. Yes, sir. Yeah, wow. Because that was my next question. Are you a professor, right?
Yes, of course. Yes. Inside and outside of the dojo.
Yeah, because the dojo professor, that's a whole thing, right?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
But it's really similar. It's really similar. Unfortunately, they don't really count in academia. Like, you're a teacher. You've been teaching for years.
Yes.
But if you try to go get a teaching job, they'll tell you you have no educational experience.
That's
which
true.
Is crazy because you know how to coach. Judo in and of itself.
Yes.
It's a conceptual framework. It has its own canon of study. It has its own information that you have to disseminate and inculcate to other people. Mm. And you need to know how to do that and to dole that out to different populations in terms of andragogy and pedagogy, how you train adults and how you train children and how you train geriatric populations. And you have to know all of that stuff. And some of that stuff you learn on the fly, and some of that stuff you learn because, you know, you read and you study, or somebody like your father taught before you.
Yeah.
And you kind of learn it by being bathed inside of the process of judo.
Yes.
The thing about that is, man, you know judo, and I've even had the opportunity to watch you online and watch you teach and how you tell a story before you show the technique and to give the background of the technique, and then you blend it with what's going on in judo and what's going on in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and the modern day. And it's kind of cool to watch because, as you said, I'm kind of OG in the game.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool to see you guys and St. Leisure and see you guys come up and make your way inside of the space.
Yeah, thank you, man. That means a lot coming from me, man. Because I remember as a teenager watching you at the New York Open. I don't know if you remember going against Atu. Remember?
Yes.
And then you did a flash arm bar, and then he tapped like this on your leg. Right? Remember this? And then, you know, you were like, he tapped, and you stood up, and then
Lori said he tapped.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then Atu stood up and was like, no, I didn't, right? But yeah, I think he admitted it.
Because, listen, Atu and I were really, really good friends.
Yes,
When he tapped, I let his arm go.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because it was locked in tight.
It was tight.
Yeah.
I will never forget that, man. And I was like, wow, that was so cool. And then, you know, so that, me as a kid in the sport, you know, teenager, like, man, I remember watching you, man. So it means a lot coming, you know, getting a compliment from you like that. So thank you. You know?
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Let's go back to where you were training, though, with the jiu-jitsu and the judo. You were telling me about the Wild West. We have a little bit of an overlap because I do jiu-jitsu with JT now. And JT trained with Lloyd.
Yeah.
Right?
JT used to beat the dog piss out of me, my man.
Oh, like, my bad. God.
Like, JT is really, really good, man. Like,
yeah,
really
he
good,
is. Yeah.
Super, super technical. He's a super nice dude, man.
Nice dude. Such a
like,
nice
he's
guy.
A nice guy, man. To be a killer on the mat that he is, he's just a really nice guy. Man, I've never seen him, you know, I've never seen him bully anybody on the mat. I've never seen him, you know, punch the mat when he got done, you know, training or be upset.
Yep.
He's just a really, really nice guy, and he's super technical.
Yeah. Technical guy, yeah. Yes. So you guys trained together at Lloyd Irving's back in the day?
Yes, we trained together sporadically. I started jiu-jitsu with Lloyd in 1998, and then I left and I took a job with Texas Instruments.
Mm.
And then I came back in 2000. From 2000 to 2002, I was home doing my master's at Howard University.
Yeah.
So I would do my studies. I train in the morning. Lloyd and I would train in the morning on the technical side. I do my strength and conditioning. Then I come back in the afternoon and I train again.
Mm.
Then I train again in the evening. And then I have another training session sometimes at 9 o'clock to about 11. Like, the amount of training, like, I don't think people know how much training happens at that place.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost a 24-hour, around-the-clock, like, training, drilling. Man, I remember times we'd watch a UFC fight at his house and then start drilling after the fight on the floor in his house.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just constant drilling over and over and over again. It was a pretty cool experience, man. He's like the things that I know. I don't have any level of disrespect for Danaher.
Yeah.
you got to understand that the things that were going, just the things that were happening 10, 15 years ago, the internet wasn't as prominent as it is now.
Yes, so very true.
People see things now and think that it's new.
Yeah.
They see these moves in jiu-jitsu and like, oh, this is new stuff. Mm. And that's not new stuff, man. It's just recycled judo that's been happening. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And some of the things that Danaher has been saying, man, Lloyd's been saying those things for years.
Yeah.
Like he was one of the premier people in the leg lock space early. Mm. Like when I won my Strikeforce fight, man, I won my Strikeforce fight by, I started with a heel hook and finished with a straight knee bar.
Yeah.
I had one person tell me, say, man, I didn't know you knew leg locks. I said, bro, I trained under Lloyd, man. I said, you're not training under Lloyd, man, and not learning leg locks.
Yeah, you know? So where was your judo training during that time period? Did you rely on like international camps mostly or going to Pedro's or like how did you train judo while you were in Maryland?
Man, I did all my training with Lloyd, man.
Wow, that's really interesting. So how did you get started in judo in the first place?
I got started in judo in the after school program, man, at Oak Grove Elementary in Miami, Florida.
Nice. Yes. And you were a kid.
And then after like a year, I started training with Jack Williams at Miami-Dade Community College. Mm. So I would go to Miami-Dade Community College, and then at the age of 12, we moved and we went to Pennsylvania.
Oh.
We moved to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
My dad bought a car dealership.
Yeah.
And I didn't do judo. I didn't do judo from after the age of 12. I didn't do judo anymore, man. I didn't do judo until I graduated from college, Shintaro.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so
I didn't know that.
I wrestled in ninth grade, and ninth grade wasn't high school back then. Ninth grade was junior high school, so I never wrestled in high school. So I wrestled in ninth grade, and then I went to high school. And when I went to high school, we moved, and we moved to Maryland when I got to. In the middle of my 11th grade year.
Yeah.
And I only played football and ran track. So then I went to Howard University on a football scholarship. And when I got to Howard, I ran track, I played football. And one day after the after my freshman year, going into my sophomore year, I went down to the wrestling room. I said, I want to wrestle.
Mm.
And Coach Cotton, Dr. Cotton now, said, what do you want to wrestle? I said, I don't care who I wrestle. I'll beat any one of these guys.
Yeah.
So the heavyweight state champion was there that he recruited. Mm. He brought him out. I said, I'm going to throw him and pin him.
Yeah.
Man, we started a match, lap five, boom, drops the Nagi, pin, done.
Wow, love it. I love that.
Hey,
yeah.
The next week I was wrestling.
Yeah.
Starting.
Wow, so you wrestled for Howard.
I wrestled at Howard. So in high school, the wrestling coach wanted me to wrestle in high school. I went to Richard Montgomery High School in Maryland. He had I guess it was 170 and a 190 or something like that in his heavyweight. He asked me every day to wrestle. I came downstairs. I was in jeans and a shirt. And I took my socks off. And I said, hey, man, if I beat all three of these guys, will you stop asking me to wrestle? He said, yes.
Yeah.
I walked on the mat, threw and pinned every one of those dudes, the other.
Yeah.
Put my socks and shoes on. The whole team was running behind me. Hey, no. I said, no.
Yeah, yeah.
The deal was if I beat all these guys. So I just threw them and pinned them, man. I mean, it was like nothing. And I wrestled in college. I wrestled D1 in college.
Nice.
And I'm a three-time Hall of Famer at Howard University. I got inducted in the Hall of Fame on a personal level for, you know, my professional pursuits. Yeah. I got inducted with the 1993 football team. We won the Black College National Championships. And then with the 1995 wrestling team because we won the conference championships. So I mean, I'll probably get inducted as a fourth time, and I'll probably be the only four-time inductee at my school because of the 1996 team won the Black College National Championships too. So I wrestled in college, man, and never wrestled in high school with a judo background that I have from the age of 6 to 12.
Wow, that's incredible. But you were also a super athlete too. Like, we all know how much of a great athlete you are, you know. Give us some stats, because I remember like talking to you as a young guy and you were telling me, I think it was like at one of these tournaments, right? I was like, you know, Roddy, I was like a teen. And I was like, how much you bench or squat or whatever it was? It's something crazy. I feel like you told me 700 pounds.
No, it was I squat 625. I never went over 625.
Okay. I was close.
In my squatting, my squatting workouts used to be, my leg works out well, so two sets of 20. All my squats were ass to grass. Two sets of 20 of 315.
Mm.
And then two sets of 15 of 405.
Nice.
And then two sets of, it was either 8 to 12
Jesus Christ.
455. And then I knock out some sets of threes to fives with 505.
Yeah. Were you always strong, though?
No, strength is it's a learned thing. I mean, you can build strength just like you build speed, man. Yeah. I mean, you got to just sit in the weight room. When I was competing, I was only 212 pounds when I started. So I lifted 6 days a week.
Yeah.
When I was at the Olympic Training Center, I only did judo three days out of the week. Mm. So I went to practice, but yeah. I didn't really practice. Like on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Eddie's like, hey man, go in there, do a couple rounds, but kind of lean back and chill, do some rounds with the girls, and that's what I did. Yeah. But I was only like Monday, Wednesday, and Friday were the days that I went hard because I had to lift 6 days a week.
Wow. So it was a very lifting heavy kind of regimen while you were at the training center.
I lifted super, super heavy. I was very fortunate at the time that the sport was already in line with what I was doing in football. I played fullback. So me to get down on a 3-point stance and run full speed into a 240, 250, 260 linebacker, 265, I mean 240 pound linebacker, that's just what I did normally. I had no level of, I never lined up against any of these judo dudes that had these fancy names and felt any type of fear or anything because I had played against people who were just, they were just bigger. They were just bigger than
specimens,
they were.
Some of these guys.
Yeah, they were specimens. Now, understand this now. Yeah. Once I did a deep dive into the judo world, there's absolutely no comparison. As great as some of the NFL athletes are, I could take the top three guys on the medal stand in freestyle, Greco, and judo at the Olympics, and they'll all start on the D-line in the NFL, period. Mm. I can take Mijian Lopez from Cuba, okay? The Greco heavyweight. Yeah. I can take Teddy Riner, all right? I can take any level of heavyweight freestyle wrestler. I can take the young dude out of Minnesota, and I can put them in camp. And they're going to make their NFL roster on the D-line. 100%. Who's going to line up in front of Teddy Riner and stop him from moving forward?
Nobody.
Nobody. There's nobody.
I wonder if you could bench press 225 to the standard of the combine, though. Do you think you can? Who? Teddy Riner.
You haven't watched him bench press online?
No.
Bro, I think he did like 500 the other day or 550 or something.
Wow.
Like, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Teddy Riner is a... When I was training, I did 225 30 times.
Well, that's a lot.
I was training in judo.
Oof. I did for 12. 12 to 15.
So maybe my son will tell you what. Last year, I went in the gym.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, I put it on to warm up and did 20 reps.
Jeez. Wow. So you have no shoulder injuries to be able to.
No. Yeah. I can't put my shoulder any further past my head. I'm not able to go all the way down to my chest anymore because I need double shoulder replacement.
Oof,
but I'm not doing it right now.
Yeah. Oof.
I've had knee injuries and shoulder injuries. The way I played judo was super violent, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was a very aggressive style.
It's very aggressive style. I had no time to learn the intricacies of Uchimata at that time. I'm a way better technician now than I was back then.
Yeah.
Like way better. I was a grip and grind. It's like ground and pound in MMA. I was grip and grind.
Yeah, I remember that. And then you would dive underneath and launch guys with the double, right?
Yeah, and I was trying to get to the ground as soon as possible.
Yeah.
My job was to do the SWOT analysis, find out where the extreme delta was in terms of the technical divide between me and the other person, and then jump into that space as soon as possible.
When
I'm lining up against... let's just say at the time a Nicholas Gill. There's no way I'm gonna beat Nicholas Gill in Tachiwaza. There's no way. It's just no way. He has too many years of experience in that space. It's just not possible. Like I had to get to the ground as soon as possible.
Okay.
My job was to, and I learned this from Leo White. There's two ways to get to the top of the medal stand at a tournament. You can win every match, or you can not lose any.
Mm.
And that's the antithesis of how you grew up and how you learned judo.
Yeah.
I studied judo based on it being a system because I did engineering in college. Mm. So to me, judo wasn't a sport. It wasn't an art. It is for me now, but at the time when I was competing, it wasn't a sport. It wasn't an art. Judo in and of itself was a system. Mm. And my job was to use game theory in order to game the system so that I could win. Judo for me occurred in these particular domains. I had NH, which was no-handed judo. Mm. I had 1H, which was one-handed judo.
Yes, yes.
I had GG, which is grip and go judo. And then I had two-handed judo. That's what I mean.
Yes.
So before domain. So I never, ever, ever wanted to be in the two-handed judo range ever.
Yeah. You know, I remember this because I remember watching Taraji being coached by you.
I changed his style because he had an Uchimata style, and we removed Uchimata from his style, and we removed the two-handed judo from his style because he could win stateside with that, but he wasn't going to win internationally with that.
That's right.
So we changed the style. Now, the problem with that style, and not the problem, but the weakness of that style, that style is super taxing on the cardiovascular system.
Oh, yeah. You got to be in great shape.
You got to be in great shape to run it over and over and over again because you cannot sit in the two-handed judo realm. I had absolutely zero desire to learn two-handed judo. Not only did I have zero desire to learn two-handed judo, you weren't going to put two hands on me.
That's right. I remember that. So the grip fighting stuff that you kind of implemented, right? I remember when Jimmy Pajo started doing the grip fighting like a world champion suit. I feel like you had a hand in all this too, right? Like,
yeah, I helped him develop it.
Right. It's I remember this.
Todd Bray helped him develop the product.
Yeah.
I helped him market the product. So when Jimmy came to me, Jimmy came to me because the product wasn't moving. So what I did was you rebranded the product, and then we put the product back out. We rebranded the product, put it back out. I remember I wrote Jimmy a check for $27,500, okay? Yeah. And he told me that was the first time he ever did business with somebody in judo where he actually made some money. And from there, he was taking up. I'm not taking any credit for Jimmy's, off the mat judo career. What I'm saying is that was a good opportunity for me to work with him because he had a name in the space.
Yeah.
And I also taught grip fighting to make some good money, make some quality connections.
Yeah.
And also jump into that space big time because until then, judo products weren't really moving like that outside of the books that were being sold by fighting films.
That's very true. Yeah, that's very true. I did buy one of your sleeves though, the sleeve thing.
The power sleeve that we did with Leah Hatashita, yes.
Yeah, I bought one of those when I was a kid.
Yeah, we were the first ones to manufacture those in this particular hemisphere. Yeah. They were being sold in Europe, but we came up with our own design and created something called the power sleeves.
We don't have
them anymore, but it was nice.
It was very nice.
It was absolutely fantastic. Yep.
Yeah, good product. Good. Wow. So where did you develop your grip fighting strategy? Like, did you come up with it on your own? Like, very interesting because you don't have a very traditional judo path where you like learn from one guy and then the guy brought you up. You kind of like created this whole thing semi, your own system, your own theories, right? So how did that?
Well, I wouldn't say, here's my thing. Judo is, for me, applied engineering and applied physics.
Mm.
I can take any judo technique,
and
it's a lever and a fulcrum, and then the person flops over. I move their legs to the normal, and then I come underneath and I throw them. It doesn't matter. Uchimata, Harai Goshi, Surikomi Goshi, Ogoshi, Koshiguruma, Kubinagi, they're all the same thing. If I draw a free body diagram of them, they're all the same thing. The thing tilts over, lever here, and if you're right, all of them are the same. So once, I got to the point, names be damned, I said, well, how do I implement this in order to win? For me, it's a system called GATN. It's grip, attack, transition, newaza. So for me, I started on the newaza part because and this is why people love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu so much. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is easy. It's simple. Mm. And what makes it easy and what makes it simple is that from a kinesthetic standpoint, all right, there's less kinesthetic awareness that is necessary for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I don't have to balance myself on 2 feet and understand where my body is in 3 dimensions. I can simply lay down on the floor. Mm. And anytime I'm on the floor, it's actually a lower energy state, all right? Yeah. When you're at the lowest energy state possible, you're laying down in your bed. When you're at the highest energy state possible, you're upright. Yeah. That's just what it is. As I wanted to move to a lower energy state, I move myself to the ground. So I started with the Nawaza. Easier to learn. I can learn it fast. I'm not as tired. I'm not as fatigued. And I can accumulate and acquire as much information as possible. Then I studied a lot of Anders K. Erickson on the acquisition of expertise and how to do it and how to utilize deliberate practice. And at the same time, I also studied strength and conditioning. In 2001, I ended up getting my certification as a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. I'm currently on the editorial review board where I review the research that comes in and approve it now. But I was acquiring all this information because I knew that judo operated under strength, conditioning, techniques, tactics, and strategy. Strength, conditioning, technique, tactics, and strategy. Everybody focuses on techniques.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's cool if you focus on technique, but here's the deal. You can be as technical as you can be the most technical 5-year-old in the world.
Yeah.
You're not going to beat me because I'm stronger than you.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very important.
So
yeah.
There is a point where strength in and of itself becomes a technique. Because I can be so strong that you just can't get your shit off, Shintaro.
No, I agree. You've been
somewhere where somebody grabbed your sleeve. You're like, it doesn't matter what you do. You're not getting your sleeve back.
Do you remember Aurelius de Spain?
Yes.
We fought.
So we went overtime in Pan Ams.
Yeah.
We went overtime in Pan Ams, and I ended up losing in the overtime by a false attack. But man, that was like running into my twin.
Dude, that guy's a freak. I fought him in the finals of the Pan American Grand Prix. He reached down and grabbed the pin, and I donkey kicked as hard as I could to try to get that hand off. That hand didn't move, dude. Yeah, I couldn't believe how strong this guy's hands were, and I kind of like almost pissed myself. I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe. Can you imagine grabbing a pan leg by the knee and you're kicking it and not moving?
Let me tell you something. It was like fighting him and fighting Mario Sabino were the worst. It was the worst for me because I really appreciate. For me, it was a lot easier to go with somebody who thought they were a technician. I was like, this ain't no problem.
Yeah, break them down.
I got this in the bag. But man, somebody who would use that like brute force and power game like that, it was really, really tough for me.
That's very interesting how really, that really is.
Let me go back. So yes, for me, it was grip, attack, transition, and Nawaza.
Yeah.
Right. I call it GATN. That's what it is for me. So I started with the Nawaza. And then when I start with the Nawaza, I look at the transition that has to get me to the movements that are good for me. And then off of that, I pick my attack. I don't pick my attack based upon I want to learn this technique today. I think that Uchimata is a useless technique. And I'm telling you
why. That's interesting.
That'll be your snippet that you use for the...
we're taking that.
Right. Here's the thing. If I'm not in a Sambo space, what transition into Nawaza can I use Uchimata for?
I don't know. Landing into side control, maybe? I don't know. Are you talking about if you failed?
Yeah.
If you failed Uchimata. Yeah, it's very difficult. You could go like, come out and go sumi.
Every other technique that I'm using, I'm using because it has a transition into Nawaza.
Let's get some examples.
For me?
Yeah.
Ogoshi.
Okay.
Ogoshi. Or cross sleeve slice, you fall on your face, I'm running clock choker or Curry Eri Jermaine.
I don't
believe in throws. I believe in attacks.
I love that.
Like, Ogoshi's an attack. A slice is an attack. A collar drag is an attack. We watched Travis Stevens do a BJJ collar drag at the Olympics.
That's very true.
Just to get to the ground.
Yeah.
Because what it is, it's a Kazuri Yoko Otoshi.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is. But once I got you to the ground, man, I got the collar, I move you around, come in, boom. My Hadaka Jime.
Right there. Yeah.
Right there. So I pick techniques that transition well into Nawaza.
Yeah.
After I pick the attack, then we use the grip sequence. Because what happens is we do it backwards in judo. In judo, we learn all these techniques, which is great.
Yeah.
But I use my techniques are bullets, grip sequences are guns. So I got all these different techniques, and they don't match the sequence. They don't match my grip sequence. So I'm sitting here doing the catch sequence, bah, 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 bah. Yeah, but where's my throw? When I post my lapel hand, what throws do I have available? I got I got Sal Nagy, Sal Nagy Kouchi, Sal Nagy Osoto, Sal Nagy Ouchi, Sal Nagy Kosoto. Right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
When I put when I grab the sleeve, what I have? When I grab the sleeve, I got what is his name?
Kataguma?
No. Yeah, you do have Kataguma, but
Mongolian Sanagi?
Yeah, that I can't remember my man that fought anyway in Vandergeese.
Oh yeah, Vandergeese.
Vandergeese posted, did the catch, brought his lapel hand out and then back over top, came over for a Marote Seanagi.
And threw
anyway for Ippone.
Wow. Okay. That's right, yeah, I remember
so
that.
So that technique is available. But off of the catch part of the catch sequence, there's not a lot of techniques available. So you go to the catch, you push across, you grab the sleeve. Once you grab the sleeve, you got your one-handed Tayo. I can push across, and then he pulls away. I have my Marote Gari. Right. I have my drop Sode.
Yeah.
And then I had, when my two hands are on the gi, for me.
Let me guess. Tomonage.
Tomonage, my man.
I remember it, but you would do Tomonage to kick the base out.
To kick the base out.
Everyone's doing that now.
Yeah, but, to just get, you know who taught me that?
Who did?
Flavio Canto.
Oh, yeah, Flavio, man. That dude, too. He does, because he could go off of that and go for that arm, or he could kick the leg over for the Canto choke.
So if you notice, Flavio Canto didn't have a lot of forward throws when he fought.
No, he didn't.
No. I stayed with Flavio for 2 weeks, man, in Brazil.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, man, I stayed at Flavio's house, man. We trained with the Brazilian national team and the Portugal national team. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Man, so once I found the grip sequences I need, my job was never to get to the two-handed judo space. But when I got to the two-handed judo space, I needed to get my attack off before you got yours off. And then once we hit the ground, we home cooking chitlins, baby.
You know, I love that because it's such a well-crafted judo system for fighting, you know, and the goal is to win, you know. And some people, the goal is to, like, enjoy Randori, hang out, break a sweat. But the goal is to win. You, like,
the goal is sports side.
Yeah, correct. For sure.
It's based upon game theory. Now, here's the beautiful thing. I don't coach everybody the way that I trained.
Yeah, that's cool, too.
I love that. I'm a coach. So my son, like, people's like, man, your son has such a great uchimata. Who taught him? So I taught him uchimata. I said, uchimata?
Yeah.
I don't need to do uchimata to teach somebody how to do uchimata.
Yeah.
My man. I mean, it's...
How old are your kids now?
Oh, Rufus will be 18 in April, and Roddy is 14.
Wow.
Roddy's a tank. Oh, man, she's a tank. She loves Osoto. She's, right. She loves Koshigiruma. She's a tank, man. She beats most of the men in the club, man. She's just super, super, super strong.
Yeah.
She trains. They both train hard. It's judo is a martial art, man. But martial arts fall under the umbrella of fine arts. There's nothing but movements.
Did you say fine arts or fighting arts?
Fine arts.
Fine arts.
Fine arts. Judo in and of itself is a dance with the seasoning of violence. That's just what it is.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. That sounded good, didn't it?
That was beautiful. That was gorgeous.
No, but that's what it is. When we're teaching the kids how to move, we're teaching them how to move. What do we have to do in judo? We have to find the what? We got to find the rhythm. You got to say, hey, man, you do the ko-uchi. You do the ko-uchi and then the marote. You can't do the ko-uchi and then the marote right away. You got to do the ko-uchi, wait for the leg to step back, and then come underneath for the marote because you got to find the rhythm. You got to find what they call the lugaluce in Spanish. Yeah. You got to find the sweet spot. And that requires for you to wait.
Yeah.
Man, I put on music sometimes for my kids so they can learn how to move and dance and come and say Nagi, move and dance and come and say, because they need to find the rhythm. The rhythm. Randori is to find the rhythm. People think Randori is to find is to win.
Yeah.
But Randori is to find, Shiai is to win. Randori is to find the rhythm, find the sweet spot, do the same thing over and over, no matter if they know it's coming. It's just like training in any other sport or training in football. Run the same play over and over again, against different defenses, against different looks, against different bodies, against different people, and then also static on the dummy, in order to get the technique refined. As soon as you learn the technique, it's not going to work. You've learned the technique. Now you got to be able to do the technique under pressure, under duress, and then you got to do the technique from the Aiyotsu position. Do the technique from the Kenkyotsu position. Because when we first learn the technique, we don't learn it from Aiyotsu or Kenkyotsu. We learn the technique from the person standing square.
That's very
correct. It doesn't. So in order for me to get the person square, I have to do a Kouchi, an Ouchi, a step out drag, or a Sasai to make the person get square. And then when they get square, my job is for the person to recognize that position and then go.
Yeah. Awesome.
The reason why we train people from square is for the purpose of visual recognition.
Yeah.
So that when, like, have you ever gone with one of your students and you fight him as a lefty and they can't attack, and as soon as you switch to righty and start gripping, then they can attack?
That's very true. Yeah.
Because the brain can visually recognize, I can go now and I can't go now.
Yes. That's interesting. Yeah. And sometimes you don't have the experience going with lefties.
You don't have the experience.
Yeah. Wow. Very interesting, man.
And that, so let me say this part too for the people who are listening on the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu side. Here's the problem that I have with a lot of people in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu space, because the coaching education and the educational process of the system of learning Jiu-Jitsu hasn't been as set because you just don't go back to the roots of Judo. But in Judo, if I learn every technique from somebody just standing square in front of me, all the Tachiwasa, and I learned the majority of, I learned the position of Keisuke Tami, the position of Kazuri Keisuke Tami, the position of Ushiro Keisuke Tami, the position of Muniga Tami, the position of Yoko Shiga Tami, the position of Tati Shiga Tami, the position of Kami Shiga Tami, the position of Kazuri Kami Shiga Tami, the position of Katate Jime, the position of Gyaku Jimmy Jime, the position of Nami Juji Jime, the position of, if I learn all those positions and I can recognize them, check mark black belt.
Wow.
And BJJ believes that I need to be able to fight to do those things. That's not what I need to be able to do. I need to be able to do them, because the key for Judo is, Judo in of itself is an educational system. And in order for me to propagate Judo and for me to teach it, I have to pour into you. You got to pour into somebody else. And then somebody can pour into everybody, because everybody's not going to fight, but everybody can teach.
That's very true. Very true. Yeah.
So we have this misnomer in BJJ that if you have a black belt and it's, then somehow you have been donned to be able to kick ass. It's not about kicking ass. Can you teach someone how to tie their belt, how to fold the gi, how to do osoto, how to get to the side mount, how to go from the side mount to the mount, how to slide the knee to the ear, how to get to Uki Katami, how to swing the leg up around and do Juju Katami. Can you teach them how to do that? Because if you can't teach them how to do that, it doesn't matter if you won any World Judo Championship, World Jiu-Jitsu Championship. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Interesting. So now you're teaching Judo. You have your own club, right? Florida Tampa Judo
Yes,
Academy?
Sir. Tampa, Florida Judo, yes.
How's that going? I'm so curious to hear more about it.
How's it going?
Because I know you coached a Bahamian Olympic team for a little while.
I coached the Bahamas Judo Federation. I still coach the Bahamas Judo Federation. I consult right now. I coached at the Junior World Championships. I coached at the Senior World Championships. I coached at the Cadet World Championships. Yeah. I was the head coach for the Cadet Worlds and Senior Worlds, and assistant coach for the Junior Worlds. I coached at the CAC Games. How are things going at the dojo? My business model is very, very different than I would guess some other clubs. I run a dojo. I have about anywhere between, at one time, I have maybe about 25, 30 students, all the way to maybe about 80, 85 students. I love teaching. I just absolutely love it. It's just, I have several streams of income that come in. Mine is not just from the dojo. I got a client that I talked to today at 11 o'clock, and I got two clients in Germany, you know?
So you do online coaching still?
Oh my God. My online clients pay more than the people who pay memberships inside the dojo.
And I'm online on the phone, judo?
I'm on the phone 35 minutes, maybe 45 minutes, sometimes an hour.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
Because here's the thing.
Yeah.
If it doesn't matter how much you train in your club. I have a client right now who's having a problem. He's having a problem protecting his sleeve hand. Okay. It doesn't matter how much randori he does. If he can't talk to a person inside of his dojo who can help him protect his sleeve hand, he's done.
Yeah.
I'm watching the film. You understand this. You can travel to Europe. You can go to You can go to Czech Republic. You can go wherever you want to go. Yeah. If you're doing the same mistake over and over again and you're not, and you don't have a feedback loop to take your film to somebody for them to watch it, to give you the feedback, for you to make the adjustments before you go to, when you go out there again, you can change it. You're wasting your money.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So who do you pay for that? Because the coach in your dojo, he can't do it.
Yeah, there's some coaches who don't really do Randori, who doesn't have the experience or the knowledge or the eyes to even look at it, you know? So that makes sense, yeah.
Shintaro, this. Me standing in front of you like this.
Yeah.
And me standing in front of you like this are two totally different things.
Yeah.
This gives you my sleeves.
Yes.
This allows my hands to be the first line of what?
Defense, yeah.
Broom. This is, it's just totally different. Yeah. This, it's like boxing. You come in, I can catch your hand.
Who stands like this, though?
No, but there's some dudes who don't know, the younger guy, and you see some people doing this stuff like this because they saw their professor doing, not knowing that I just grab your sleeve, pushing. I grab your sleeve, and bam, and just punch you right in your face.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, punch him right in the mouth.
Why not punch you right in the punch you right in the face? Why not?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What you said that, and it goes with the no-handed judo, one-handed judo, because there was a time that I trained like with Taraji, because we're both New Yorkers, right? Mm-hmm. And Taraji dips into my dojo every now and then, and I see him, you know, I've known him for a very long time, so it's like, you know, when he talks about this stuff, and, you know, he always gave credit where it's due, right? Like, those little minute differences when you're just squaring up within reach, huge difference, like righty versus righty, right? Righty versus lefty. You just like, right. These little things kind of matter, and I love how you just said here versus here. I love that. And you know what? It takes a very skilled, experienced eye to be able to give that type of feedback. To be able to
give that. I mean, I watch a film. Yeah. I have a client who's a veteran Worlds player.
Mm.
Man, and I just watched his film and dissected it and gave it back. He was like, man, this was so hard to hear. He said, but this is why I pay you.
Yeah.
He says, because you can make these adjustments and make these changes. Mm. Like, I have something called FSH, all right? Mm. I said, beat the FSH. I don't care. So, and it works if you're Iyotsu or Kenkyotsu. It doesn't matter.
Mm.
You beat the front side hand, period.
Mm.
I'm a lefty.
Yeah.
You're a righty. Mm. My job, I take my left hand and I beat your right hand, period.
Yeah.
Very annoying. Right hand.
Yeah.
It's annoying. And even when you rip it back, then I can actually set my left hand.
That's very true. And then you have this.
As soon as I set my left hand, when I was doing judo, I'm going drop that naive to the left.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter if I hit it or miss it. It just needs to be good enough to rock you, and I got to do it how many times? Three times in a row, and then you're going to get a what?
Shido.
You're going to get a Shido.
That's very true.
That's it.
And you get a clock choke off of that, too, if I, like, belly out. Or, you know, not a clock choke, but if I belly out first, then you can get on top, and now you're
trying to get up the right. Exactly. And even if you go to the side, and I get a side score, then I scoot back underneath, which I used to do with Theo Caracasa.
Name. Yeah.
Boom. Throw, scoot back underneath, whop, and then jump on his arm.
Man, those are good days, man. I remember those days. Theo gave me my cauliflower ear. I was 15 at National. I went in for a fireman's, and he kneed me in the ear. He gave me cauliflower ear.
Well, let me tell you something. Yeah. Theo was a rough and rugged judo player, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a rough and rugged dude.
Man, those days, man, the 100 dudes. You know, I loved it, going to Nationals and seeing you, Atu, and then, like, sticking around for the finals. You know, I was out first round. I lost to, like, Daniel Doyle or something. I was 15, 16. But, like, sticking around and watching the guys, man. And, you know, it's such a small community. But for me, man, coming up as a teen, those were my heroes. You guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Christian Arona, you know? Like, yes. I remember you. I think I saw you fighting him. You know, all these guys, man. And there was pretty a good amount of people at the 100 division.
Yeah, you know? We used to get along. Like, I remember Chuck Jefferson.
That's right. Yeah.
He's like, how do you guys talk so much? How do you guys get along? Because Mike Barnes and I would talk at the table.
Yeah,
we'd talk at the table. I mean, on the way out, you know what I mean? Talk behind the table and,
You
know, we're on deck and we're just talking and, you know, and then when we go out there, we fight like we don't like each other. And then when we get off the mat, you know, we slap five and keep going. And Chuck Jefferson's like, how do you guys do that? Because the 73-kilo dudes, it was Chuck, Jimmy, Ryan Reeser, Orlando Fuentes, and then there was a couple other scrappers that were in there, buddy, and they did not get along when they were competing. Yeah.
Even the 60-66, heavyweight's different. 100 plus, very different type of
people. Bro, it's very different. You know, we got fat man love. You know what I'm saying?
Mike Proditis, he was in the mix, right?
I trained with Mike Proditis, man. Yeah. I trained with him, too. Like, he's doing really, really well right now on the...
Oh, is he?
On the veteran circuit. Yeah, man, he's winning. Yeah, he's doing very
that's
good.
That's great, yeah. And Martin Brunsayer would come down from 100-plus sometimes. He was a very strong athlete too, right?
Yeah, I don't know if Martin ever came down from 100-plus, man, but he was 100, man. He was huge.
Yeah, he was a big dude.
He was
yeah.
a big dude. He was big and super strong, man.
Yeah, he was. Man, super, super the golden strong. Days, huh? Do you miss those days of training and being in the room? No, you don't? Why not?
No, it was brutal, man. Like, brutal, I tell people the level of that training that occurred in – who I had to become at that time and the type of person that I was, it just wasn't good, man. It just wasn't good. I'm not going to say any names, but I'm older now and I can see the new people who retire. And I've had people talk to me about some of the new people who have retired. Like no names. Okay. I'm in a different space in my life, man. And I've heard people say, oh man, so-and-so is an asshole. So I said, hey man, I've heard the individual that I'm talking about, I've heard him say negative stuff about me and have had people come back and tell me that he said negative stuff about me. And I said, hey man, do what I do. I said, extend him some grace. I said, because he's not going to be the same person in 10 years that he is now.
Sure, yeah.
I said, you can't cheer for him at the Olympics and then talk shit about him behind his back. I said, because who he needed to be and who he has to be at that time is what made him who he is.
Yeah.
I said, and he'll change over a period of time. I said, your priorities change. Your testosterone levels will go down as you get older. You'll mellow out. But you can't cheer for those people and then get mad with them when they are what they had to become to do that job. That's a really tough job. And you got to be really, really callous. Yeah. And I'll say this. I'll give people this name. So I remember training with Jimmy Pedro. And I've seen Jimmy and I've trained with Jimmy. Jimmy is a mellow guy now. When Jimmy was training, Jimmy was a mean fucking dude. Now, Jimmy had a great mask when he in public, but I've watched Jimmy on the mat, my man. You're talking about an intense dude. Like the level of intensity that Jimmy Pedro had. Unbelievable. Like, and he did a great job when he was going out, you know, shake hands and, you know, hug the people and kiss the babies and stuff. But man, behind the scenes, I'm not saying he was a jackass, anything of the sort. What I'm telling you is that level of intensity, he can't show people that level of intensity because they're not ready to see that level of intensity.
It's true.
You don't want, my mom said it like this one time. She was like, in order for high-level sports to maintain their integrity, the fans don't need to look behind the curtain.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah, you do have to be a savage. You know, you got to be selfish, right? You got to put yourself first, priorities, number one. Like, I don't care about anything else but me winning this thing, right? Everything and anything.
I got divorced in 2019, and I can look back. I don't think I did anything egregious to my ex-wife, but I can look back on my life because when you go to therapy, you got to take, it doesn't matter if you think you did right or you think you did wrong. Nobody gets off of a ride that they're really enjoying. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you got to look back and say, okay, where was my hand in this situation?
Yeah.
What could I have done better? When I look back at it, the answer, you know what the answer is?
Tell me.
Nothing. What was going to happen was going to happen. Yeah. And either the person was going to ride with me or they weren't. Because here's the deal, my man. Some of that shit I ain't changing. Because I'm happy with what I got. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not trading that Olympic ring in for nothing, my man. I'm not trading none of my championship rings in for nothing.
Yes, you know?
And I'll deal with the fallout. Yeah. But I understand that who I was then impacts who I am now. Like some of my daughter and my son's friends, they think I'm crazy. You know what I'm saying? I'm not crazy. I'm just really intense at times. And my intensity level has gone down.
Very true. Yeah.
Right. That's it's gone down. True. It's like I'm like mellow. You know, I'm like super mellow.
Yeah.
Like I was the dude. Unfortunately, I was the guy. I have no problem talking about. I'm older now. I'll be 49 this year. When I got on the mat, man, my mentality was I didn't have enough time I was doing judo, but I wasn't a judoka. Mm. I'm a judoka now.
Wow, I love that. Yeah.
Back then, I was doing judo, but I was not a judoka, my man.
Yeah.
I was a football player with a gi on, my man. And my job, was to line up in front of you and destroy you and gut you up and get you out of there. And if you got hurt on the way, so be it. Mm-mm.
Did you not want to pursue that after Howard?
Football? Oh, I did, man. The Detroit Lions flew me out, and I thought they were going to pick me up as a free agent, but it didn't happen. Mm. Then I got an offer to play in the CFL, but the offer to play in the CFL was for $27.5 USD. Yeah. And I had a job with Texas Instruments for $40,800 in 1997. So I took a job with Texas Instruments, and that's what landed me in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Yeah. I got to Attleboro, Massachusetts, man, and I started training judo again.
Wow.
And I started training with Charlie Bridgham, who just passed away this past year. And then I started training with Jimmy Pedro. When I went to train with Jimmy Pedro, and this is why I don't buy into any of that bullshit when people say, oh, it's a little bit too far to get to your dojo. Boston had something called the Big Dig that they were doing at the time. It was like a big construction thing that was going on.
Yeah.
And they would do it like a lot at night. They work at night. When I go to judo practice at night, it take about an hour, hour and a half to get to Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy trained at Somerville Judo Club. And then when I came back after practice was over, I would be stuck in traffic, sometime getting home at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
There were times when I had to pull off the side of the road and go to sleep. And I've slept for about 3-4 hours and then get on the road and keep going because the traffic was gridlocked.
Yeah.
I'm talking about 2 hours, 3 hours, sometimes 4 hours to get home.
Oof.
And this this is 2-3 times a week. Man, I remember I drove, it was the winter. This is a crazy story I tell about Jimmy all the time. Mm. You've heard of Kengeko training, yes?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not gonna talk about that. I'm gonna tell you about I did that in Japan at Tokai, which was horrible. I cried every fucking day. Excuse me. You can bleep that out if you need to. So I'm going to the dojo. I drive up to Hoku in Somerville, and there's only one car there.
Mm.
I guess Jimmy had the key.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I walk in. It's fucking cold, okay?
Yeah, it's cold up
it's
there.
It's freezing cold and no heater on, okay? I don't say nothing. No. I don't say nothing. Jimmy don't say nothing. Jimmy had this ritual. He used to brush his teeth before he did Randori, before he started working out. I don't know.
That's funny.
He used to go, he used to brush his teeth, and he'd start taping up. So I'm not saying nothing. You know what I mean? Jimmy's taping up. I start taping up. Jimmy's dressed. I'm getting dressed. I don't say nothing. We walk out to the mat. Jimmy gets up front. Kyosuke, right? Sets the clock. Starts running. Does 10, 10, and 10. You got 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups, 10 jump overs. Yeah. Get back up, start running. Boom. Then we're on the mat, sliding up and down, doing what you call me. Jimmy's running a full fucking practice like everybody is in the joint. Wow. I don't say nothing. Yeah. Okay? He sets the clock. We do about 6 rounds of Newaza. Mm. Boom, sets the clock. We do about 6 rounds. Now, I'm dying, going with Jimmy because Jimmy's a machine. Yeah. About 6 rounds of Tachiwaza. We finish. We stretch. We get off. And then we go in the back. Then we didn't talk, man. Jimmy didn't say shit, okay? Yeah. Then we finished, we go in the back, we bowed off.
Yeah.
I said, Jimmy, it's fucking cold. And he says, man, it's cold as shit. I said, I can't feel my legs from the hip down. He said, me either. Bro, I could not feel Shintaro, I could not feel my legs, my man, from the hip.
Up there.
Bro, it was so cold. My feet were like ice. I didn't complain because Jimmy didn't say anything either.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Jimmy didn't say nothing, so I wasn't going to say anything either. Cause
you don't want to be that guy. Yeah.
Bro, I'm a brown belt, man. And to me, Jimmy is like a demigod. You understand what I'm saying? Like Jimmy, like Jimmy's the man. Like, listen, people don't understand this. Right now, when you look at judo, you see world championships every year. When we were competing, it was every other year, right? So in 1998, Jimmy went 83-4.
Wow. Did he? Damn.
Yes. And he won the Shiriki Cup, which no American had ever won.
Yeah.
83-4. My man.
Yeah.
Understand this. Jimmy won the world championships in 1999.
Yeah, that's right.
If there was world championships, Jimmy, in 1997, Jimmy hurt his, I think he hurt his MCL.
MCL?
MCL or LCL on his knee, one or the other. Hmm. And he didn't go to the Worlds. In 1997, 1998, 1999, Jimmy was the best 73 kilogram player on the planet. Mm. Period.
Yeah, wow.
In 2000, the pressure in the workup on the Olympics and all the media, I think I kind of threw a monkey wrench in all of his training.
Yeah.
He ends up fifth, okay? Mm. Retires, comes back, gets third, man. In 2004.
That's amazing, yeah.
Man, when I say it's beyond amazing.
It really is, man.
Oh. I went to train with Jimmy. Even when I was at the training center, I went back to train with Jimmy because I needed to know, after I got married, I went back to training. I needed to know how the hell is he training stateside and he's so good and he just goes out to travel and do the camps. And that's when I got my own strength and conditioning coach. His strength and conditioning program.
Yeah.
Was so ridiculous that it could make up for some of the things that he didn't have in terms of training partners inside of the dojo.
I mean, he trained a lot in Tsukuba, too, in Japan. I think he had, like, a homestay family and all this stuff. He did do that.
Yes,
right? But, man, boy, that's what an interesting thing, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was something, man.
Do you train your kids like this, too?
My own personal kids, yes.
Your own personal kids? Yeah. You hard on them?
Unfortunately, yeah. Mm. It's I'm not as hard on Roddy as I was on Rufus, but I don't coach Rufus anymore. I got Rufus because I have people who coach me and advise me.
Yeah.
And like I think 2 years ago, I stopped coaching Rufus. I got him his own strength and conditioning coach.
So is there sports judo? They must play all the sports too, right?
Rufus is going to Howard University in the fall.
Well, it's a great university. Yeah. Good. Oh, that's awesome. Football. Like
he's on football scholarship. He's on football scholarship.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, full football scholarship. Yes.
Oh man, that's amazing.
So
he's big kid. He's big.
Rufus is 6'2", 220.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's way bigger than me, man. He's tall. Like, he dwarfs.
How tall are you again?
Man, I'm 5'8¼". That's what I used to be. I think I'm shorter now.
I'm the same way, man.
Yeah.
I tell people I'm 5'10", but I'm not 5'10".
Bro, I tell when my son, when he sees the people who I used to fight, I tell him, I said, man, I was the shortest dude in 100 kilograms. At the Olympics, I was the shortest dude in 100 kilograms.
You know what? It was you and Peter Cousins.
Because Peter Cousins, Peter was a 90 and he moved up to 100.
Yep. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, because him and Winston Gordon used to fight all the time.
That's right.
Yeah, oh, man.
Throwback.
Yeah, man. Winnie Gordon's, that's my man. Yeah, I love Winnie. He's all right.
Yeah.
But, man, what was I saying? So
tough on the kids,
Yeah, it was, it's created a little bit of tenuous relationship with my son and I that kind of is smoothing out now because I don't bother him as much anymore. But it's one of those things where you want to give your kids what they ask you for. Like, I had to remind my son, there's a thing on his wall that he wrote when he was, a paper that's on his wall that he wrote when he was like 5 or 6 years old, saying that I love football. I never pushed my son into football, but he told me he wanted a football scholarship. I've always trained my kid in judo. I told him, you need to stay in judo, and then when you finish with judo, all right, you'll be able to do anything. Because the biomotor skills that are developed in judo are great for any sport. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the athletic activity is. It's going to be around the four pillars of human movement. And I learned this from J.C. Santana. I'm not sure if he made it up, but it's the four pillars of human movement. There's push-pull.
Yeah.
There's level change. There's rotation. Mm-hmm. And locomotion. Push-pull, level change, push-pull, rotation. Level change, rotation, and locomotion. So judo handles all of those things.
Yeah.
Other sports don't handle those things like that. Mm-hmm. I told Rufus, I said, man, trust me, if you do judo at a high level as a young kid, you'll be able to do any sport. Mm. He does judo, starts playing football in 9th grade, COVID year. They don't get the whole season.
Yeah,
plays in 10th grade. Then he played 11th grade. He has a tremendous season.
What position does he play?
Middle linebacker, my man.
Ooh, what a position.
What he sees now is that because when he walks on the football field, he knows for a fact he can beat any of those people one-on-one.
Yeah.
which gives him a huge confidence boost.
Definitely. All right? Yeah.
He ends up hurting himself in the pregame of his senior year. He hurt his MCL, yeah. But he had an early offer to Howard.
Yeah.
So full scholarship. So we used the whole football season over. What he told me, he said, Dad, I said, yes. He said, thank you. Yeah. He says, I get it now. Yeah. I said, oh. Well, you get it now.
Yeah, okay.
But he didn't like it, man, when I woke him up every morning. I had to get up in the morning and go train. My daughter's a little bit different. She's kind of glad that she has my time now and Rufus doesn't. Because I've done my due diligence with Rufus. You know, I did what I was supposed to do, scholarship required. Now we got to work with Roddy.
Yeah.
She wants a wrestling scholarship.
Wow. So she's been wrestling this whole time?
No.
Ooh.
Roddy's done. She's done a wrestling tournament. I think she did like 2 wrestling tournaments. One of them she won.
But she's been in judo this whole time?
Oh, my. Roddy started judo at the age of 3.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And then how's she at judo? Does she compete at all? Or,
She's won the U.S. Open a few times. Nice. But I don't believe in sending my kids to the Pan American infantiles and juvenile. I don't do that.
Okay.
For what? So let me say this. For my children, I understand that a lot of other people do it because that's the time when their kid can win. Mm. I'm not worried about my kids dropping out because my kids can't quit. Mm. My kids can't quit judo.
Yeah.
There's no quitting judo. There's nothing worse in my opinion than being in a situation where you don't have any self-defense, so you can't do anything if you get caught in a situation. Mm. That's horrible to me. That's judo in my house is not an extracurricular activity. It is part of the curriculum.
Yeah.
Period. Mm. Rufus got his black belt last year. He doesn't have to come to the dojo unless I have, when I have activities or cross team activities, if he's not in another sport, right now he's in track. If I need him for a promotion or if I need him to come, listen, he comes and teaches class sometimes. He'll come in class. Like he's a black belt. I told him a black belt is not a rank, it's a responsibility.
Mm, I love that too.
It's not a rank, it's a responsibility. You're responsible. You still got to come in. He has the key to the dojo. You still got to go in there sometime. You got to clean up my man, put the toilet paper on the rack, and do what you need to do. And make sure. Right. You're a black belt in the facility.
Right.
Rest. Like my man, my cousin passed away 4 weeks ago now, and I got the call. And we grew up together. It just knocked me down, man. It just knocked me down. I called Rufus. I said, Rufus, man, I can't make it to class today, man. I need to sit down at home. I got to cry it out a little bit, my man. I had to cry it out. He was like, no problem, Dad. I got you. Boom. And he went and he taught class.
Oof.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's my daughter, she'll have her black belt at 16 too, I'm sure.
Damn, she's 14 now and then out there competing, huh?
She'll compete this weekend. At the North American Judo Championships.
Okay,
at,
good.
We have some USJA competition. She's doing 4 divisions, 2 COSIN and 2 regular.
Nice.
She's not doing the US Open this year, but she'll most likely do the camp because this summer I want to give her an opportunity to cross train and wrestling a little bit, let her have some fun. Yeah. The thing about judo, man, is that, let me say this, there's certain clubs, I know Kitsusai does this good. Chief Pride does this well. The Coen brothers do this well. They have a community. The Coen brothers kind of do it because of the wrestling, but they have a community where the kids kind of have fun. And judo is a little bit different, man. Judo is, it's not a team sport.
Mm-mm.
It's a martial art, but it's really individual. And you're kind of in control of your own progress and how you do things. But the wrestling gives you an opportunity to be on teams with other girls.
Yeah.
Hang out and the camaraderie and
it's very true.
What I appreciate though is from the judo she learns how to, she knows how to be an independent learner, and she's not a follower.
Yes,
she has leadership skills. I can put her in the front of the class. She can teach.
Mm.
I also like what she gets from the wrestling, and I'm gonna let her cross train in wrestling a little bit more this summer. Go to some camps so that when she goes into 9th grade, she can hit the ground running and wrestle.
Awesome. You still train a lot?
Man, I train. I train every day, but I'm not on the mat. I'm on the mat once every 10 days.
Okay.
I can't get on the mat all the time, man.
Yeah, but you still grapple a little bit?
Yes, but that's nice. Once every 10 days, man. Once every 10 days.
But you still lift weights, everything, right?
I still lift weights. Yeah. I still, like, in the morning, like this morning.
Just no shoulder pressing, right?
No, I guess I bench a little bit. I'm losing
that ability on my left side. I can't really like shoulder press heavy anymore.
You can't. I can't do Marote, you know, at all anymore.
Yeah, me neither. My elbow doesn't close all the way now. It's terrible. My elbows hurt, but
it's horrible. It is what I've had a couple knee surgeries, but I appreciate all of it. I wouldn't trade it in for nothing.
Yeah, man. Oof. I remember back in the day, you and Adler fighting it out too. That's a name that we didn't. Right?
Yes.
He was another one that was big, strong, lefty. Well,
he was a strong lefty.
And he had
lefty.
Good, you know, and I think maybe you gave me this tip when I fought him in, what was it, 2001 or 2002 when I first won U.S. I had him in the finals, and it was like, you know, if you lock up 50-50, left, right versus left, he's going to throw you Uchimata. I think it was you because we were talking on the sidelines or something. And then so I just came off wrestling season, and I would put, you know, right hand on the collar and then run around and grab a leg. And then he didn't like that. Shido out of bounds, and then he started panicking a little bit.
Exactly. He didn't like that type of style. Like, I fought him one-handed. I fought him one-handed the whole time, one-handed judo and doubles, and one-handed and singles, one-handed and high crotches. And I remember we went in the overtime, and I came inside and got the left hand on and stepped across and boom, and hit him with a Kouchi for a Yuko.
Man.
Boy, he was pissed.
Oof, love it.
And the thing about it is that a lot of people thought just because I did football and that I had a power style that I did not know how to do judo. Mm. I tell people all the time, I say, you don't get a black belt in judo because you know how to do judo. I think I still know how to do judo.
Yeah.
My foot sweeps and my I still know how to do. I mean, I do judo well. You know? It's just that when I was competing, I was using my strengths, period.
Yeah,
and working on my weaknesses inside of the dojo.
Awesome, man. I love hearing that, dude. And you know, I was coming in, you were sort of like already established, and then we never actually had a match in competition.
No, we didn't.
Every tournament, I would look at the brackets, and we would be in the same bracket, and I would be like, oh, you know, partially, like, thank God. And then there was also a part of me that was like, man, I wish one day I could get this guy. And then, you know, you retired, because, you know, you're 10 years older. And there was a little bit of like, oh, man, I missed out on, you know, competing with one of the greats, you know. But thank you, man. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all your insights. We got to get going now, but let's do this again, man. I think, where can the guys find you who are listening here?
I mean, you can find me online, man. You can find me at Roddy Ferguson on Instagram or at Tampa Florida Judo. What I really like to do is I like to give people, you know, free products and free stuff. Mm. You can go to www.gripfighting.com, enter inside my Grip Fighting Academy, and there's a seminar that I did in Atlanta that's 100% absolutely free. You're more than welcome to. You don't have to buy anything. I mean, I really want you to learn. I really want you to get better. And that's it. That's what I have for you, man.
Yeah,
that's
awesome, man. Maybe you do a video for me on YouTube because I have such a huge YouTube thing. You know, maybe we could also clip some of your things, put it up there so people could see it also. Love these ideas that you got with the systemized method to winning and competing. Man, that's a beautiful thing, dude. I'm like, inspired right now.
And I tell people, it's different. If you want to be a competitor, that's different than if you want to be a grassroots judo player.
Yes, for
and
sure.
I respect both. I don't think one is better than the other. And the one thing that I don't do, and I want to get this point out there because a lot of people make this mistake. Mm. Do never, ever, ever. If you've gone to the Olympics or you haven't gone to the Olympics, you've gone to the World Championships, you haven't gone to the World Championships, so if you won a bunch of national, never, ever, ever berate the coaches at the grassroots level. Mm. Without those coaches, the students that you have never come to you.
Very true. Yeah.
That person that's running that after-school program and picking the kids up with the bus and providing the lemonade and vanilla wafers after practice, those people are some of the most important people in the judo process.
Yeah.
That coach that's teaching the kids how to throw left and how to throw right and changing their feet and doing all the stuff that you have to detrain, if they don't put those kids in a gi at all, that person never comes to you.
Very true. Very true.
Learning how to line up in line, learning hierarchy and structure, learning how to bow and respect the place, learning how to clean up a mat, learning how to defer to people who have a higher ranking, learning how to work well with others, learning maximum efficiency and a minimum effort, learning all these things that we have in judo, they have an enormous amount of benefit that goes beyond getting at the top of a medal stand. And when you're a coach like me and the other coaches that are like me that do specialized coaching, specialized training, I sometimes hear is people talk bad about these other coaches. Don't do that, man. Mm. Have a level of gratitude and graciousness for anybody that opens the door or opens a portal for someone to start the martial arts process. Even the person, I remember I used to talk bad about Taekwondo. Man, do you know how many people that we've trained, Shintaro, that have done Taekwondo?
Yeah.
But if those dudes if they don't never step on the mat, they don't ever do Taekwondo, they don't ever enter into that martial arts space, they don't ever come to see us.
Yeah, very true. Man, that's a good lesson for me too, man. I got to remind myself of that, because sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, this guy. Ah. You know, it's so easy to kind of do that, you know, especially, you know, if you've been in the game for so long.
You've been in the game for a long time, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
but, you know, some people, we're very, very grateful for all those people. Yeah, so that's a great point, Roddy.
Oh, man, thank you, man. I can tell you this, man, dude.
Yeah.
What I was in my 20s is not what I was in my 30s, and what I was in my 30s is what I was in my 40s. And I will say this to anybody, and I'm on the end of my 40s, getting ready to be in my 50s, and I always try to make this point, man, if anybody who's watching, if I've rubbed anybody the wrong way over, you know, over the time of my life, hey, man, let me just give a global apology, you know, because it's things happen. You know, you change over time, and I'm not – who I was when I was doing MMA and competing is not who I am now. It's just very, very, very different.
Awesome.
Man, I love everybody, my man. Yeah. I love everybody.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Dude, thank you so much for being here, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Shintaro. Thank you for having
me. Let's do
it
again, man. I got to tell you, man, this whole thing was invigorating for me, man, to see you, you know, obviously not face-to-face, but kind of face-to-face, you know, and talk to you about your roots. And I knew a lot of the stuff you were talking about already because I've heard it so many times through the grapevine, but to get you on here and actually have a conversation with you, great, man. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Listen, Shintaro, man, I'm really, really, really proud of you, man, and what you've done professionally and personally, man.
Appreciate it.
You have shown people, as I have done, and Jimmy and Travis and other people, that you can make a good living, man, by doing martial arts, especially if you do it the right way. You know what I mean?
Yes,
you're doing you're doing a fantastic job, man. I appreciate
you. Thank you. You too, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes.